which evokes troubling stereotypes of African-American life. Except he said it like this. She is a black woman and everybody already thinks she got 5011 babies with 5011 daddies, that she got welfare checks coming in 5011 people's names. She got that already to deal with, but she got the white folks to believe that she is some kind of Houdini doll maker, and she even got them thinking that this is an actual job. She is working her hustle. You think she's supposed to get up there talking about her man is in the who's gal? Soon as she say that, everybody will start looking at her and thinking about the 5011 everythings, and she might as well go on back home and work for the phone company. Again, these are his exact words. My exact words should be, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to guilt trip you, but it's heavy, Georgia. You don't know what it's like in here. And trust me, you don't want to know. I went to the library and pulled up the article and a photo one more time. You wore a smile on your face and my ring on your finger. I don't know how I didn't see it before. Love, Roy. Dear Celestial, didn't you get my letter last month? I said I was sorry. Maybe I didn't make it plain. I'm sorry. So write back. Even email is fine. Roy. Roy O. Hamilton, Jr., PRA 485-6932. Parson Correctional Center, 3751 Lauderdale Woodyard Road, Jemison, Louisiana, 70648. Dear Mr. D, I don't suppose that this is what you pictured when I came to you and asked for Celestial's hand in marriage. There I was, all serious, trying to do things the right way, and you said, her hand is not mine to give. At first I thought you were kidding, but when I determined that you were serious, I tried to backtrack, pretending it was all a joke. But inside I was mad and embarrassed. I felt like I was eating with my fingers when everyone else was using a knife and fork. Her hand wasn't yours to give, like you said. But at the same time, I needed to approach you as a man to another man. I was asking if I could be your son-in-law. I am very close to my own father. Maybe Celestial shared with you that technically he is my stepfather, but he is the only father I've ever known, and he has been a positive male influence. I am his junior in every way. But he doesn't know much about the world I was living in Atlanta, even though his sacrifices made it achievable. Big Roy has always lived in one small southern town or another. He didn't finish high school, yet he provided a secure home for our family. I respect my father more than anyone else in the world. I came to you because we have a lot in common. We are both immigrants to Atlanta, if you know what I mean. You've been there longer, and I'm just off the boat, but our backgrounds are almost the same. You are rags to riches, and I was rags on my way to riches. Or at least, that's the way it felt at the time. With my present condition, who knows what will happen to me. But when I asked for her hand, I was seeking your blessing, as her father, but also as a mentor. With Celestial, I was punching above my weight, and I guess I was hoping for a clap on the back. But I ended up feeling like a dummy. And maybe I'm a dummy for writing this letter at all. Mr. Davenport, Celestial has not come to Louisiana to visit me in 2 months now. We have not had any significant arguments or disagreements. I was expecting her in September, but she didn't show. She sent word that she was having car trouble, and I expected her the following weekend. But I have not seen her at all, nor have I received any correspondence. Mr. D, I'm hoping that you will speak to her on my behalf. I know you will say that I should reach out to her myself. Trust me, I have tried. When you sent me away, you said that maybe I didn't know her well enough to marry her. This is why I'm turning to you now. I obviously do not know her as well as I thought. You, on the other hand, have known her all her life, and maybe you will know what to say to her to bring her back to me. Please tell her that I understand that being married to an incarcerated man is a major sacrifice. I am not accustomed to asking for things. I've worked for everything I have. I wouldn't have been bold enough to show my face in your house if I hadn't put in the effort. In my current position, there is no work that I can do to win her love. There is no work I can do to convince you, as her father, that I'm worthy. Before I had my good job and my gold cufflinks, what do I have today? Only my character. I know she can't wear my character on her left hand, and I know it doesn't pay bills or father children, but it's what I have, and I believe that it should count for something. Thank you, sir, for reading this. I hope you will consider my request. And please do not share this with Celestial or her mother. Let this please stay between us as men. Sincerely, Roy O. Hamilton, Jr. Franklin Delano Davenport, 9548 Cascade Road, Atlanta, Georgia, 30331. Dear Roy, I am pleased to hear from you, as I think of you often. My wife fancies herself a prayer warrior, and she pleads with the Lord for you on a regular basis. No one here has forgotten you. Not me, not my Gloria, not Celestial. Son, and I use the word deliberately, I think you are misremembering our exchange when you came asking for Celestial's hand. I didn't refuse you. I merely explained to you that my daughter is not my property. I almost chuckled to remember it. You came here as proud as a peacock's daddy with that velvet box tucked in your jacket pocket. For one bewildered second, I thought you were about to propose to me. That is meant to be humor, by the way. I was glad to see that you were serious in your intentions, but I didn't think I should see the ring before Celestial did. I could tell that your feelings were a little bruised when you left that day, and frankly, that was a positive development. You said in your letter that you are not accustomed to asking for things, and that was apparent, not from your gold cufflinks, authentic, who knew, but from the sway in your walk. You were not asking me for her hand, and I still assert that it wasn't mine to give. Instead, you were telling me that you were marrying her, and she hadn't even agreed. I surmise that your strategy was to get on your knee, whip out the ring, and I assumed it was a whopper, and announce that she had won the marriage sweepstakes. I was honest when I said that you didn't know her very well if you believed this approach would be successful. Here is an anecdote from my personal history. I proposed to Gloria 3 times before she said yes. The first instance was, admittedly, a bit awkward, as I was encumbered with my first wife. Gloria is a refined woman, but these were her exact words. Hell no. The second rejection was kinder. No, not yet. The third time I wasn't down on my knees, neither literally or metaphorically. I presented my modest token and asked her to share my life. I apologized for my transgressions. I laid myself low. I didn't involve her father, and I didn't ask her best friend to help me make the scene right. I took her hand, telling her the truth of my soul. She answered with a nod. There wasn't this hooting and hollering and jumping up and down you see on TV. None of this proposing via billboard or at halftime at the Rose Bowl. Marriage is between two people. There is no studio audience. All that said, I'll speak to Celestial about why it is that she has put her visiting schedule on hiatus. In the spirit of disclosure, I admit that I was not aware of this until now. But I must make it clear to you that I cannot speak on your behalf. I can only talk to her on behalf of myself as her father. I hope you will not interpret this as rejection, because that is not my intention. You are part of our family, and every one of us holds you in highest regard. I feel obligated to tell you as well that I will be sharing your letter with Celestial. I am her father, and I cannot collude against her. She is the joy of my world and my only living blood relative. But I can tell you this. I know the sort of woman we have raised her to be. Her mother was loyal to me, even when I didn't deserve it. And I feel confident that my daughter will be no less steadfast. Please write to me again, son. I'm always glad to hear from you. Sincerely, Franklin Delano Davenport. C.C. C.G. Davenport. Dear Celestial, by the time you get this letter, Mr. D. will have narked on me. I hope that you're not upset that I wrote to him. I've felt close to your daddy since the first time he invited me to that big house. I always think of it as the mothership, back when you and I were feeling each other out. I'll never forget it. It was cold outside, but Mr. D. wanted to sit out on the wraparound porch. I was freezing, but I didn't want to be a chump. I was ready to tell him that my intentions were honorable and all of that, but he didn't even want to talk about you. I got there, sat down, and he promptly started rolling a blunt. It was crazy. I felt like I was on candid camera. Then the old man said, "Don't act like you don't smoke. I can see it in your eyes." Then he whipped out this tall fireplace lighter and damn near singed off my eyebrows, blazing me up. I took a hit with him, and it was like, "Welcome to the family." Celestial, you know I have a thing about fathers. That's the real reason that I'm writing. I plan to send you another letter begging you to come visit. But for one thing, I'm sick of begging. You'll come see me when you come see me. That's what I got between the lines of your daddy's letter. You're grown, and nobody can make you do anything you don't want to do. Like I needed somebody to tell me that. I'm writing to you now because something has happened that has my head all messed up. I know that you're on hiatus, like your daddy said, but what I'm telling you is burning a hole in my pocket. I got to tell it to somebody, and Georgia, the only person I trust with it is you. You remember the last day we were together, and I carried you down to the stream to hear the bridge music? I planned to tell you then and there that Big Roy wasn't my biological father. I lost my nerve, but I had to eventually come correct because it wasn't fair for us to be talking about growing a family without you knowing about a genetic joker in the pack. I wanted to do what was right, although I know I should have told you before we even got married. I started to bring it up a couple of times, but I could never make myself spit it out. We fought hard over it, and that particular disagreement led up to the predicament that I find myself in now. I have to confess that although I apologize to you for not telling you sooner, it's not until now that I see how it feels to not know somebody that you think you know. Forgive the cliche, but I hope that you are sitting down. You might want to pour yourself a glass of wine because this will blow your mind. Not only is my biological incarcerated in this very same prison, he is none other than Walter, the ghetto Yoda. This is how I found out. As you know, a brother with my verbal skills is in high demand in prison. I can write letters, decipher documents, and even do a little jailhouse lawyering. By a little, I mean a little. But I can do better than most. My Morehouse education at work, Benny Mays would be so proud. Anyway, I was doing some work for Walter, and I happened upon his face sheet, and there across the top was his full government name, Othaniel Walter Jenkins. There is only one man in the world with that name. But there once were two. Before Big Roy made me Roy Jr., I was Othaniel Walter Jenkins II. My mother kept Othaniel as my middle name for the sake of history, I guess. When I saw the name, I knew it was him. Remember what he said to me when I first got moved into his cell? Us bow-legged brothers got to stick together. And he looked at me to see my reaction. I didn't think much of it at the time, but he was pointing out the family resemblance. You know, they call him my pops, but I thought it was some prison shit. People make families in here, and Walter did look after me like I was his own. Let me back up. This is the story that Olive told me. She said that when she was 16, she finished high school in Oklahoma City, hopped on the Greyhound with the intention of living in New Orleans. She had taken a typing class and figured she was qualified to be a secretary. On her way through, she met my biological and got sidetracked in a little town called New Iberia. She was almost 17 and he was 30 or something like that. He wasn't married, but he was a father many times over, so Olive stressed that I should be careful when I meet girls from Louisiana, Mississippi, or East Texas. When she said that, I pictured him Johnny Appleseeding all over the region. Long story short, he took off and left her broke and pregnant. But you know Olive wasn't going to go out like that. She stayed in New Iberia until she was ready to pop. Then she went off in search of her man. She went all over town, leading with her stuck-out stomach until sympathetic old ladies gave her whatever little information they had. Finally, someone at the butcher's told her that somebody said he was in Elo, working at the paper mill. Mama said she should have known it was faulty information since it involved the word work. When she got to Elo, Walter was long gone. But she hit upon the three things she says a woman needs: Jesus, a job, and a husband. And as far as Olive was concerned, that was all the story that I needed to have. For me, that was all the story I required. I had Big Roy, and everybody in Elo knows me as Little Roy. Why would I feel compelled to chase down some rolling stone? Well, sitting there, it was like that stone rolled right upside my head. When library time was over, I went back to my cell. Where else was I going to go? Not like I could go sit under a bridge and think. When I got there, he was using the commode. Life ain't right, Georgia. I find out the man is my biological, and he's standing there with his dick in his hand. Pardon my French, but this is a story that must be told in full. He finished his business, turned to look at me, and read me like a newspaper. He said, "What, you found out?" I told him about the face sheet, and he said, "Guilty as charged." and even smiled a little bit, like he had been waiting all his life for this conversation. I wasn't even sure what it was that he was guilty as charged about. Was it that he was guilty of being my father, or guilty of not telling me? He was over there grinning like all of this was good news, but I felt like a sucker. He asked for a chance to tell his side of the story, and that's what he did. You have no privacy in prison, and let me tell you, these dudes in here gossip like bitches. Walter was talking loud, like he was saying his Easter speech. His version was not all that much different from my mother's. They met on a run, Olive from her father and Walter from a woman, or the woman's husband to be precise. The scene is the colored section of a Greyhound bus. 15 hours is a long time to be elbow to elbow, and by the time they passed into Louisiana, my mama was gone, head over heels over head. Walter sweet-talked her into staying with him for a while in New Iberia. At this point, he said, "I was a pretty nigger in my day." He actually said that. Olive and Walter literally shacked up, in a shack. Running water was the only amenity. Anyway, it was a matter of a couple of months before she got pregnant. Like any pregnant girl, she wanted to get married, and like any trifling motherfucker, he ran off and left her. When he was telling me this, he switched into ghetto Yoda mode. When a woman tells you she is having your baby, your first mind is to get the hell out. It's like if the house is on fire. You don't think to escape. You just do. It's human nature because you know she is asking you for your whole life, and a man don't have but one life. It was bullshit, and I knew it was bullshit, but something about his little soliloquy stuck in my throat like a fishbone. Celestial, I think it was because I know I wasn't there for you when you told me the test was positive. I said, "What do you want to do?" What I did was the same as leaving town. Anyway, Walter saw me sitting there snuffling back my thug tears, and he tried to defend himself, swearing up and down that he never beat my mama, never stole from her, even though her pocketbook was right there on the chiffon robe. He said it wasn't even personal, that he had left other women with big bellies, that this was the way things were then. But I wasn't thinking about him, Celestial. I was thinking about you, and what a piece of shit I am. This is the truth. I was sitting on the bed, having my own private come to Jesus, while Walter was getting more and more agitated. He said, "You think it's a coincidence that we are in this cage together?" He said his buddy Prejean, who was from Alo, told him who I was, and he checked me out on the sly. He said, "They say that fruit doesn't fall far from any particular tree, but I didn't know which tree you fell from, me or your mama's." Then he said that he saw me and decided that all I got from him was bow legs and nappy hair. And then he paid good money to get me moved to his cell before I was beat up any more than I already was. He said, "Admit it. Things got better for you once you moved in with me. You got to give me some credit." Celestial, I want to be mad at him. He left my mama like a $2 trick. But he would have been a terrible father to me in my real life. He wouldn't have sacrificed to get me to Morehouse. Still, I have to give him the credit he asked for. If it wasn't for him, I could be dead by now, or at least a lot worse off. Walter isn't a Don Corleone of the prison, but he is an old head, and people stay out of his way. He didn't have to take me in, but he did. It's complicated. Last night, when lights were out, he said, "I can't believe she let that nigger change your name. That's disrespectful." I pretended like I didn't hear him. To say even one word would be a crime against Big Roy. He made me his junior with more than his name. He was my father. Or should I say, he is my father. But Walter is my old man in here. This world is too much for me, Celestial. I know I said I wasn't going to do any begging in this letter, but I will ask you once more. Please, come and see about me. I need to see your face. Love, Roy.
Dear Roy, I'm writing this letter to ask you to forgive me. Please be patient. I know it has been a long time. At first it was because I was going through a lot, but now my reason for staying away is boring and uncomplicated. It's just that the holiday season is here, and I'm slammed at the shop. My assistant, Tamar, is going to cover for me weekend after next. She's a student at Emory with talent to burn. She has a gorgeous gift for quilts, just breathtaking. So while Tamar minds the store, Gloria and I are going to drive up. She wants to give your mother one of her famous blackberry jam cakes, and I could use the company. I know that you're mad at me. You have a right to be frustrated. But I hope that we don't waste our visit being angry. When we sit down together, our time's precious. If you can forgive, please forgive me. If I explain, will you listen? Tell me what I need to do to make it better. What does Walter have to say about all of this? I hope you haven't talked about me too badly. I don't want to meet my father-in-law for the first time and make an unfavorable impression. I'll get to meet him, won't I? How are you two dealing with this shocking development? I guess you're the only one who's shocked, but I'm sure that it has changed things between you. Did you tell Olive? There's so much to unpack here. In the meanwhile, give me his information and I can put something on his commissary for the holidays. I know you're proud, but let me do that for him and for you. He's family. I'll see you soon. Yours, Celestial.
Dear Celestial, thank you for coming to see me. I know the journey is long, and I know that you are a busy woman. You look different. I thought maybe you lost weight because your face had more shape to it. But I don't think the shift is on the physical plane. Are you all right? Is there something happening that I should know about? This isn't a backdoor way for me to ask if you're seeing somebody else. That's the last thing on my mind. I'm just asking what is going on. When I saw you, I was looking into your face, but I didn't really see you. I don't have the right words to explain. Roy.
Dear Roy, how am I expected to respond to your last letter? Yes, I have dropped a few pounds, some on purpose. I've been flying to New York a lot these days, and you know they are a little bit leaner up there. I don't want to show up looking like the unsophisticated chick from down south with the folk art. If my dolls are going to be taken seriously, I have to look the part. But I don't think my waistline is what you're talking about. Am I different? It has been close to 3 years, so I guess I have changed. Yesterday I sat under the hickory tree in the front yard. It's the only place where I find rest and just feel fine. I know fine isn't a lot, but it's rare for me these days. Even when I'm happy, there is something in between me and whatever good news comes my way. It's like eating a butterscotch still sealed in the wrapper. The tree is untouched by whatever worries we humans fret over. I think about how it was here before I was born, and it will be here after we're all gone. Maybe this should make me sad, but it doesn't. Roy, we're getting older. Every week or so I pluck one or two gray hairs from my head. It's a little early for dye, but still. Obviously, we are not elderly, but we're not teenagers either. Maybe that's what you saw. Time getting away. Am I seeing someone else? You say you aren't asking that, but you asked it anyway, if only to say you weren't asking. Your ring is on my finger. That's what I will say. Celestial.
Dear Celestial, Olive is sick. On Sunday, Big Roy came to visit without her. As soon as I saw him sitting on that little bitty chair, looking like a bear sitting on a mushroom, I could tell that there was news, and it was bad. He says she has lung cancer, although she hasn't touched a cigarette in 23 years. I want you to go and see about her. I know it's been a long time since I've been able to do for you in return. I feel like I'm running up a tab, just like with Morehouse and my student loans. At one point, I estimated how much it cost me per day, then per hour, then per minute. I know you aren't keeping a scorecard, but I am. I need you to come see me. I need you to put money on my books. I need you to keep your Uncle Banks on his toes. I need you to remind me of the man I once was, so I don't forget and become another nigger in here. I feel like I need and need and need, and it's wearing a hole in the fabric. I'm not crazy. I can see it. I know you don't come around like you used to. I know what true feeling looks like. But I know what obligation looks like, too. What's in your face, that's all duty. This that I am asking you, I know it's a lot. I know the drive is far, and I know that you and my mother have never been friends. But please look in on her and tell me what my daddy wants. Roy.
Dear Roy, this is the letter I promised that I would never send. Before I go any further, I want to tell you And I am sorry. I want to tell you that even typing these words is killing me. I won't say that this will hurt me more than it hurts you, because I know how much you're hurting every day. And no matter what is happening to me, it will never compare. I understand that I'm not in the same agony as you are, but I'm in pain, and I cannot continue to live this way. I can't go on being your wife. In some ways, I feel like I never even got to try my hand at that role. We were only married a year and a half before lightning struck, counting off the time in months like you do with a baby. I have done my best to be married without actually being a wife for 3 years now. You're going to think this is about another man, but this is about the two of us, about our delicate cord that has been shredded by your incarceration. At your mother's funeral, your father showed what the connection is between husband and wife. If he could have, he would have gone into the grave instead of her. But they lived under one roof for more than 30 years. In some ways, they grew together and grew up together, and had she not died, they would have grown old together. That's what a marriage is. What we have here isn't a marriage. A marriage is more than your heart. It's your life, and we are not sharing ours. I blame it on time, not on you or me. If we put a penny in a jar for each day we have been married, and we took a penny away every day we've been apart, the jar would have been depleted a long time ago. I've been trying to find ways to add more pennies, but our visits in that busy room at that sad table send me home with empty hands. I know this, and you do too. The last 3 times I have visited, we said almost nothing to each other. You can't bear to hear about my days, and I can't bear to hear about yours. I'm not abandoning you. I will never abandon you. My uncle will continue to file appeals. I'll continue to keep your commissary up to date, and I'll visit you every month. I can come as your friend, as your ally, as your sister. You're part of my family, Roy, and you will always be. But I can't be your wife. Love. And I mean it. Celestial.
Dear Georgia, what do you want me to say? Am I supposed to say that I'm okay with us just being friends? Maybe it's me, but I made a different interpretation of till death do us part. Because the last I checked, I wasn't dead yet. But you do what you have to do. Be an empowered woman or whatever they taught you in college. Leave a brother when he's down. I never thought you would be this kind of person. There are women around here who have been coming to see their men for decades, riding buses to leave Baton Rouge at 5 a.m. Walter has women he never even met in person, and they come to see him. And when they get here, they do more than talk. Some women bunk in their cars in the parking lot so they can be in the visiting room as soon as it opens. Before she died, my mother was here every week. What is it that makes you think that you're so much better than all of them? Don't come here talking about you're here to be my friend. I don't need friends. R.O.H.
Dear Roy, I didn't expect you to receive my very honest letter with confetti and a ticker tape parade, but I did at least expect you to take a moment to consider my perspective. Are you really comparing me with the women who crowd the crack of dawn bus to prison? I know them, too. I've met them myself. They organize their whole lives around coming to Parson. Besides working, it's all they do. Every week, they are strip-searched. More than once, I've had to let some guard put her hand in my panties just so I can sit across the table from you. This is what you want for me? This is what you want for my life? Is this the way you love me? You always talk about how you understand that this is hard. You slump in your chair, admitting that you can't give me what I need. But now you act like you're confused. For more than 3 years, I've been there in body and in spirit. But I've got to change the way I'm doing things, or I won't have any spirit left. I said in my last letter, and I'll say it again. I'll support you. I'll visit you. I just can't do it as your wife. See.
Dear Celestial, I am innocent.
Dear Roy, I am innocent, too.
Dear Celestial, I guess it's my turn to send a letter I said I'd never write. I want you to know formally that I am discontinuing our relationship. You're right. This marriage isn't a two-way street. How can I argue with that? But you cannot argue with this. I only want you in my life as my wife, because in my head and heart, I'm your husband. Please, do not come visit me. If you disregard my wishes, you will be turned away because I have taken you off my visitors list. I'm not being spiteful. I'm trying to figure out how to live with this new reality. R.O.H. Roy O. Hamilton, Jr., P.R.A. 485-6932, Parson Correctional Center, 3751 Lauderdale Woodyard Road, Jemison, Louisiana, 70648. Dear Mr. Banks, this will be your last act as my attorney. Please remove the following person from my visitors list. Davenport, Celestial, Gloriana. Sincerely, Roy O. Hamilton, Jr. Robert A. Banks, Esquire, 1238 Peachtree Road, Suite 470, Atlanta, Georgia, 30031. Dear Roy, this is a response to your letter of last week. Without violating privilege, I have spoken with the Davenport family, who indicate that they will continue to retain me in my capacity as your attorney. If I don't hear otherwise from you, I will continue in my duties on your behalf. As per your request, I have drafted the documents amending your visitors list, although I urge you to reconsider. Roy, in my years as an attorney, I have won cases and I have lost them, but none of them upsets me as much as yours, not only because it has left my niece disconsolate, but because of the damage done to you. You remind me, actually, of Celestial's father. He and I have been friends ever since he had holes in his shoes. We worked the graveyard shift at a box factory, clocking out just in time to run to school. Franklin got where he is by the sheer force of his determination. Your will is like his, and so is mine. I know it was disheartening to have our appeal denied by the state appellate court. It is disappointing, but not surprising. I know Mississippi is the favored contender for worst of the South, but Louisiana isn't far behind. The federal courts are much more promising because there's a chance of encountering a judge who isn't drunk, corrupt, racist, or some unpleasant cocktail of these variables. There is hope. Do not give up. Pride should not cut you off from the Davenports. Prison, as you know, is very isolating. You are staring down the barrel of a long sentence, and while I am working to find a solution, I urge you not to disconnect from the people who remind you of the life you once had, and the life you want to live again. That said, I am including here the document I mentioned that will bar my niece from coming to visit. If you choose to post it yourself, you may. As your attorney, our correspondence will be confidential, of course, but I felt that I must offer my advice. Sincerely, Robert Banks. Roy O. Hamilton, Jr., P.R.A. 485-6932, Parson Correctional Center, 3751 Lauderdale Woodyard Road, Jemison, Louisiana, 70648. Dear Mr. Banks, I know that you are right, and with this letter I am unfiring you as my lawyer. I will leave Celestial on my visitors list, but I am asking you, as my attorney, not to mention this to her. Should she come to visit me, she will find her name there. But to tell her implies that I'm asking for a visit, and I'm not asking her to do anything. These years have been rough on her, I am sure. But you know that they have been rougher on me. I try to see her side of things, but it's hard to weep for anyone who is out in the world living their dream. All I wanted from her is that she honor the promise we made when we said to have and to hold, etc. I ask this of her, but I won't plead anymore. Please continue pursuing my case, Mr. Banks. Don't forget me in here or think I am a lost cause. You warned me not to be surprised by the outcome of the appeal, but how can I keep hope alive if I'm not allowed to be optimistic? I feel like people are constantly asking me for things that are impossible. And, Mr. Banks, I know that your services are not free. Any more the Davenports pay you, I'll repay to them. And after that, I'll give you the same sum as soon as I am able. You're my only hope. I never thought I would be saying this to you, someone I really don't know that well. My mother is gone, and my father is here. But what can he do? He's a hard-working man with values, but without money. Celestial seems to have moved on. All I have is you. And it pains me to know that you're being paid with her daddy's money. But you're right. It's stupid to put pride ahead of common sense. So this is my letter saying thank you. Sincerely, Roy O. Hamilton, Jr.
Dear Roy, today is November 17th, and I am thinking of you. Maybe on this anniversary of our first date, you will answer my letter. When it was our safe word, we used it to bring communication to a halt. Now I hope it can restore our connection in some small way. This isn't how I want things to be between us. Let me care for you in the way that I can, as one human being to another. Love, Celestial. Dear Roy, Merry Christmas. I haven't heard from you, but I hope you are okay. Celestial. Dear Roy, if you don't want to see me, I can't force you. It is unkind that you would cut me off because I can't be exactly the way you want me to be. I'll say it again. I'm not abandoning you. I would never do that. See?
Dear Celestial, please respect my wishes. Up until now, I have lived in fear of this happening. Let me be. I can't dangle from your string. Roy.
Dear Roy, happy birthday. Banks tells me that you're fine, but that's all he will say. Will you give him permission to give me news? C. Dear Roy, you will get this around Olive's anniversary. I know you feel all alone, but you are not. I haven't heard from you in so long, but I want you to know that I am thinking of you. Celestial.
Dear Celestial, can I still call you Georgia? That will always be my name for you in my head. So, Georgia, this is the letter I have been waiting 5 years to write, the words I have been practicing. I even scratched it into the paint on the wall beside my bed. Georgia, I am coming home. Your uncle came through. He went over the heads of these local yokels and ran it straight to the Fed. Gross prosecutorial misconduct basically means they cheated. The judge vacated the conviction, and the local DA didn't care enough to retry. So, as they say, in the interest of justice, I will soon be home free. Banks can explain it all to you in more detail. I have given him permission, but I wanted you to hear it from me, to see it in my own handwriting, that I will be a free man 1 month from today in time for Christmas. I know that things have not been right between us for some time now. I was wrong to take you off my list, and you were wrong not to fight me about it. But this is not a time for blaming each other for what we cannot change. I regret not answering your letters. It has been a year since I have received any word, but how can I expect you to keep writing when you thought I was ignoring you? Did you think I forgot you? I hope I didn't hurt you with my silence, but I was hurt myself and also ashamed. Will you hear me when I say that the last 5 years are behind me and behind us? Water under the bridge. Remember the stream in Elo? The way the bridge makes a song? I know that we can't start love over, but this is what I do know. You have not divorced me. All I want is for you to tell me why you have chosen to remain my lawfully wedded wife. Even if someone else is occupying your time, you have chosen to keep me as your husband these many years. In my mind, I picture us at our same kitchen table, in our same comfortable house, passing quiet words of truth. Georgia, this is a love letter. Everything I do is a love letter addressed to you. Love, Roy. 2. prepare a table for me.
Andre, this is what it must be like to be married to a widow. You give her bandages for her wounds. You offer comfort when memories sneak up and she cries for what looks like no reason. When she reminisces about the past, you don't remind her of the things she has chosen not to recollect, all the while telling yourself that it's unreasonable to be jealous of a dead man. But what can I do other than what I've done? I've known Celestial Davenport all my life, and I have loved her at least that long. This is the truth, as natural and unvarnished as Old Hickey, the centuries-old tree that grows between our two houses. My affection for her is etched onto my body like the Milky Way birthmark scoring my shoulder blades. On the day we got the news, I was aware that she didn't belong to me. I don't mean that, on paper at least, she was another man's wife. If you knew her, you would know that she never belonged to him either. I'm not sure if she even realized it herself, but she's the kind of woman who will never belong to anyone. This is the truth that you have to lean close to see. Picture a $20 bill. You think it's green, but when you get up close, you find that it's beige linen with dark green ink. Now, consider Celestial. Even while she wore his ring, she wasn't his wife. She was merely a married woman. I'm not making excuses for myself. I know that there are men in this world, better men than me, who would cut these feelings off and burn the stump the day that Roy went to prison, especially with him being falsely convicted. His innocence is something that I have never doubted. None of us did. Mr. Davenport is disappointed in me, believing that I should have been a gentleman and left Celestial alone, letting her be a living monument to Roy's struggle. But anyone who can't understand doesn't know what it means to have loved someone since you first figured out how to bend your tongue to talk, how to flex your feet to make steps. I was a witness at their wedding, you know. The day she married Roy, I signed my name, Andre Maurice Tucker, even though my right hand trembled so badly I had to steady it with my left. At the church, when the preacher asked if anyone could say why these two should not wed, I kept my own counsel there at the altar, cummerbund strapped around my waist and a sloppy fist beating in my chest. She meant what she said on that spring day. But now you have to consider all the days that came after, as well as those stacked up before. Let me start again. Celestial and I grew up on the same narrow street in southwest Atlanta. The street was Lynn Valley, off of Lynn Drive, which branched off of Lynnhurst. The dead end was considered a plus because we could play in the road without getting run over. Sometimes I envy the children today with all their taekwondo, psychotherapy, and language immersion. But at the same time, I appreciate that back then, being little meant you really didn't have to do anything but stay alive and have fun. We ran loose straight through the 70s, but we got stopped short when a serial killer terrorized the city. We tied a yellow ribbon around Old Hickey in memory of the 29 missing and murdered. It was a rough couple of years, but the threat passed. The yellow ribbons frayed and fell like leaves and were burned like leaves. Celestial and I continued to live, love, learn, and grow. When I was 7, my parents tangled in a nasty divorce back when nice families didn't split up. Once Carlos moved out, a grand performance involving his 3 brothers, an off-duty cop, and a U-Haul, Celestial volunteered her own father. I'll never forget her pulling me by the hand down to the basement lab. Mr. Davenport wore a white coat, like a doctor, his goggles burrowed in his asymmetric afro. "Daddy," she said. "Andre's daddy ran off, so I said you could be his daddy, too, sometimes." Mr. Davenport fired up a Bunsen burner, pulled down his goggles, and said, "I'm amenable to the proposition." To this day, this remains the greatest gift that anyone has ever extended to me. Mr. Davenport and I never became like father and son. The chemistry wasn't quite right. Still, with that gesture of generosity, she lifted the covers. I crawled under, and we became a family. To lay it all on the table, we were not quite like brother and sister. We were more like kissing cousins. Our senior year in high school, we went to the Valentine's Ball together, for lack of other options. She had her eye on a bass drummer, and I had my eye on this one majorette. As luck would have it, they had their sights on each other. I wasn't surprised to be dateless. in a world that prized tall, dark, and handsome. I was little, light, and cute. After the prom, we kissed each other in the back of the limo from Witherspoon's. Then, back at her house, we snuck down to the basement and made out on the little sofa her father crashed on when he needed a break from his work. The room smelled like rubbing alcohol, and the sofa cushion smelled like weed. Celestial glided over to a shiny file cabinet and produced a flask filled with something that might have been gin. We passed it back and forth until the courage kicked in. Then I was such a mama's boy that I confessed everything to Evie. The next morning, she had two things to say. A, it was inevitable, and B, it was my duty to go next door, ring the bell, and ask Celestial to be my girlfriend. Like her daddy had said all those years ago, I was amenable to the proposition. But Celestial was not.
Dre, can we pretend like we didn't do that? Can we just watch TV?
She was asking me a real question, wanting to know if it were possible for us to reverse the clock. Could we shift away from the memory of the night before, grow toward some other sun? I finally said that we could try. She broke my heart that afternoon, like how Ella Fitzgerald could shatter a glass with a song. I'm not telling this to say that I planted my flag way back in high school. All I want to get across is that there is real history between us, not just an accident of time and place. After high school, we went our separate ways, seeking our fortunes like the three little pigs. My seeking only took me 7 miles up the road to Morehouse College. I was a third-generation legacy, and this was enough for Carlos to pony up the tuition, even though he hadn't paid Evie half of what she asked for in child support. My first-choice school was Xavier University in New Orleans, but I had to go where Carlos was willing to send a check. I'm not complaining. Morehouse was a good fit, teaching me that there were dozens of ways to be a black man. I only had to choose which one was right for me. Celestial picked Howard University, although her mother voted for Smith in Massachusetts and her dad endorsed Spelman. But whatever Celestial wanted, Celestial got. So they bought her a gray Toyota Corolla she named Lucille, and she set out for the nation's capital. I half-heartedly tried to meet up with her when Morehouse played Howard for homecoming. My girlfriend at the time wasn't keen on meeting Celestial. Even she could tell from the way I pronounced her name that my feelings were more than friendly. About 3 weeks after I didn't see her in D.C., she came back home, shattered. Her family kept her essentially sequestered for nearly 6 months. I visited twice, and I would have come by every week, but her Aunt Sylvia sent me away. Something shadowy and female happened between them, as mysterious and primal as witch's brew. Come September, Celestia was ready to live again, but she didn't go back to D.C. Strings were pulled, and she enrolled at Spelman College after all. Evie told me to keep an eye on her, and I did. Celestial was the same girl I had always known, but with a little bit of risk about her, like she might cut you. Her sense of humor was ratcheted up a few notches, and she stood even taller. All that was a long time ago, when things were different. I know that nostalgia is a hell of a drug, but I can't help recalling those days when we were underage and broke. She would sometimes come stay with me in my dorm room, and we feasted upon wing on wheat, a chicken and bread combination that cost only $2 and some change. After we ate, I would mess with her, asking her why she never brought around any of her friends to meet me.
I noticed that you never talk about me bringing anybody until after the food is all gone.
I'm serious, I said.
Next time,
she said.
I promise.
But she was never going to bring anyone around, and she would never tell me why not. On these evenings, near 1 a.m. or so, I always offered to escort her back to her own campus, and she would say,
I want to stay here.
We slept in my twin bed, her under the covers and me beside her with a sheet between us, for modesty's sake. I would be lying if I didn't say sharing the bed with only a stretch of cotton separating our bodies didn't rile me up from time to time. But looking back, I attribute that to my youth. Once she woke up before the sun and whispered,
Andre, sometimes I feel like I'm not all the way together.
That was the one time I joined her underneath the sheet, but it was only to quiet her trembling. You're good, I told her. You're good. And if I may say another thing to color the record, they met through me. She had slept over and Roy came by at 8 a.m., trying to hustle up some quarters to do his laundry.
He came busting in with no warning, like there was no way I could be doing anything private. In college, I was a hard guy to categorize. I wasn't militant enough to be an African with a K. I wasn't peculiar enough to be a nerd. And it goes without saying that I didn't have the moves to be a Rico Suave. So I may not have had a natural female constituency, but I did well enough. Roy, as per usual, was drowning in attention. He was tallish, dark, and handsome, but unpolished enough that it made him appear wholesome. Since our dorm room shared a wall, I knew that the Claude Hopper act was a technique. Not that he wasn't country as sugar on grits, but he wasn't stupid or harmless. "I'm Roy Hamilton," he said, staring at Celestial like he was hungry.
"Roy Othaniel Hamilton, from what I hear through the wall."
Now Roy looked at me like I had shared classified information. I held my hands up. Then he turned his eyes to Celestial again and kept them there. At first, I think it was the challenge of it all. He couldn't believe that she had less than no interest in him. Even I was confused. That's when I realized that her transformation was permanent. This was the new Celestial. Straight ahead and direct. The byproduct of all that time she spent recuperating with her aunt. 6 months in Sylvia's care taught her two things. How to sew dolls from socks, and how to tell immediately when a man was coming at her from the wrong side of the street. Roy came to my room 3 or 4 times to ask after her. "Ain't nothing up with y'all, right?"
"Nothing at all," I said. "I've been knowing her since we were little."
"Okay," he said. "Then give me some intel."
"Like what?"
"If I knew what I'd be asking you."
There was insight I could have given him, no doubt. However, I wasn't going to give Roy the map to the core of her. He was a cool dude. Even back then, I liked him. He and I were almost frat brothers. Part one of my father's conditions in sending me to school was that I pledge. In his mind, only his firstborn son could keep the legacy going. When I showed up for the informational meeting, Roy was there, too. Being first-generation everything, he didn't have too much to write on the index cards, whereas the rest of us were busy inking our bona fides. I was sitting right next to him, so I saw a little blemish of panic bloom on his face. When the brothers came around and asked for his card, he handed it back as blank as the moon.
"I didn't feel these questions could tell you who I am."
He didn't put the bass in his voice when he said it, but there was a little something there. The big brother snorted at him and said,
"Fool, fill out the card."
Yet he won a little ground for himself there. Roy glanced over at my card, on which I block-lettered my dad's whole entire family tree.
"It's in your blood," Roy said.
I waved the card and said, "Ask me how many times I have seen these people in the last 10 years.
Roy shrugged. "It's your family."
I handed my card and it sat beside him again. Things got silly. I won't go into detail because secrets are secrets, but let's just say there was ceremonial garb, but no sacrificial chickens or other livestock.
"We should break up out of here."
Roy poked me with his elbow, testing the waters. And when I think back on it, I wish we had headed for the door, escaping with our dignity intact. Flash forward, short version, neither of us may lie. Slightly more detailed version, they kicked our asses for 3 weeks straight, and we still didn't make line. Super secret version, when we didn't make line, I was privately relieved. But Roy wiped his eyes with his sleeve. He and I were friendly, if not friends, but I wasn't going to present Celestial on a silver platter. Evie raised me better than that. It took another 3 or 4 years for them to find each other on their own. And then the time was right. Was Roy the kind of guy you want your sister to marry? The truth is that you never want your sister to marry at all. But they were good together, Celestial and Roy. He took care of her, and to my knowledge, when he promised to have and to hold, he was sincere. Even Evie approved, to the point that she played piano at the wedding. It was an uplifting story. Boy chases girl until she catches him and all of that. At the wedding reception, I sat at the head table, wishing them the best. When I raised my glass to their happiness, my words were heartfelt. Anyone who would say different is a liar. All this is a true story. But life happens. Trouble happens. And good luck, too. I'm not trying to sound all que sera about it, but
How can I apologize for the nearly 3 years Celestial and I have spent as partners in life? And besides, if I was going to start apologizing, to whom would I make amends? Would I go to Roy, repentant and red-handed? Maybe in his mind it would seem appropriate, but Celestial isn't something you can steal, like a wallet or even a bright idea. She is a living, breathing, beautiful human being. Obviously, there are more sides to this story than just mine and hers. But what can't be questioned is this. I love her, and she loves me. She is the first thing I think about in the morning, whether I wake up beside her or wake up by myself in my own pitiful bed. When I was growing up, Grandmama used to say, "The Lord works in mysterious ways." Or, "He might not be there when you want him, but he's always right on time." Evie used to say, "God will do to you what he feels like needs to be done to you." Then Grandmama would tell Evie to hush and remind her that getting left by a man was not the worst thing that ever happened to somebody. And Evie would say, "It's the worst thing that ever happened to me." She said it so much that she came down with lupus. "God wanted me to see what misery really was," Evie said. I didn't like all this God talk, like he was up there toying with us. I preferred more of the tenderness and acceptance my grandmother promised in her hymns. I told this to Evie when I was a little boy, and she said, "You got to work with the God you were given." You also have to work with the love you are given, with all of the complications clanging behind it like tin cans tied to a bridal sedan. We didn't forget Roy. Celestial and I both sent money to his account every month. But it was like sending 35 cents a day to feed an orphan in Ethiopia, something and nothing at the same time. Still, he was always there, a shimmering apparition in the corner of the bedroom. On the fourth Wednesday in November, I came home from work to find Celestial in my kitchen, wearing her sewing smock and drinking red wine from a bubble glass. I knew she was agitated from the sharp click of her nails against the tabletop. "Baby, what's wrong?" I asked, taking off my coat. She shook her head and offered a sigh I couldn't interpret. I sat next to her and took a sip from the glass. This was a thing with us, sharing a single drink. Celestial ran her hands over her hair, buzzed short since we first got together. The close cut made her older, and not in a negative way. It was the difference between a young lady and a grown woman. "You okay?" I said. With the hand not holding the wine to her lips, she produced a letter from her pocket. Before I unfolded the lined paper, I knew exactly what it was, knew exactly what it said, as though the meaning bypassed language and found its way into my blood, uncut.
"Uncle Banks worked a miracle," she said, rubbing her hands over her naked head. "Roy's getting out."
She rose from the table as I got up and went to the cupboard and got my own bubble glass and sloshed it half full of Cabernet, wishing for something a little bit stronger. I raised my glass. "To Banks, he said he wouldn't give up."
"Yeah,"
Celestial said.
"Finally, it's been 5 years.
"I'm happy for Roy. He was my friend."
"I know," she said. "I know you don't wish anything bad on him."
We stood before the kitchen sink, gazing out the window at the brown grass, covered with fallen leaves. Against the far wall at the edge of the property grew a fig tree that Carlos planted to celebrate my birth. Not to be outdone, Mr. Davenport set out a jungle of rose bushes for Celestial's first birthday. And to this day, they creep up a dozen trellises each summer, fragrant and undisciplined.
"You think he wants to come back here?"
Celestial asked.
"In his letter, he doesn't mention any plans."
"How could he have plans?" I said. "He has to start over."
"Maybe he could come here," she said. "You and I could stay in my house, and we could set him up in your house."
"No man is going to go for that."
"He might."
I shook my head. "Nope."
"But you are glad he's out," she said. "You don't begrudge him that?"
"Celestial," I said, "what kind of person do you think I am?" Of course, I was happy to hear that he was being set free. Nothing would change the fact that my chest filled with gratitude on behalf of Roy Hamilton, my friend, my Morehouse brother. Still, There were things that Celestial and I needed to discuss. Yes, last month she finally agreed to talk to Banks about divorce papers. And